1340 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. 2024 GOP candidates focus on Iowa. Former President Trump is among those attending the Lincoln Day dinner in Des Moines.
Meet crooked Joe Biden, the most corrupt president in history.
CBS's Ed O'Keefe is at the dinner.
Now in third place, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott also avoids attacking Trump.
What we all should be very concerned about is the weaponization of the Department of Justice. We should be very careful on how we use immense power against political opponents.
Iowa Republicans hold the 2024 caucuses on January 15th. The dinner tonight comes a day after the special counsel's office files three new felony charges against former President Trump, including obstruction in the classified documents case. CBS's Robert Costa has more.
Trump allies tell CBS News tonight that the uncertainty on the legal horizon worries them, not just with the special counsel, but in Georgia. There, a grand jury could soon issue charges over Trump's conduct in the aftermath of the 2020 election, possibly days before next month's first Republican primary debate.
Nearly 180 million Americans are under heat alerts from the Great Plains to the Northeast. CBS's Roxana Saberi reports from New York City, where the heat index neared the triple digits today.
People aren't just heading to pools. They're also going to the oceans, but the heat is there, too. A government agency says heat waves are now affecting 44% of the world's oceans, the highest figure since 1991.
The backup driver in the first death involving a fully autonomous vehicle has pleaded guilty to endangerment. CBS's Christopher Cruz says the woman had initially been charged with negligent homicide.
Police say Rafaela Vasquez was streaming a TV show on her phone in the moments before Uber's Volvo SUV hit and killed 49-year-old Elaine Hertzberg. It happened as Hertzberg crossed a darkened street with her bicycle in suburban Phoenix in March 2018 outside of a sidewalk. Today, as part of a plea agreement, a county judge sentenced Vasquez to 3 years of supervised probation.
The Mega Millions jackpot is now $940 million after months without a big winner. But before you start spending money in your dreams, KCAL-TV's Jasmine Veal with a reminder.
The odds of winning this mega jackpot are about 1 in 300 million. UCLA professor of psychiatry Dr. Timothy Fong says people put that aside as they crave the feelings that playing brings.
This is absolutely designed to stimulate what we call dopamine and adrenaline at a very, very, very low cost. For $2, you can generate hope, wonderment, amazement, dream.
This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For WAUK The Shaw, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The Family Foundation buying the former Cardinal Stritch University campus is the same organization that founded St. Augustine Academy in Milwaukee. The Ramirez Family Foundation is buying 12 buildings on the Glendale and Fox Point campus. Gus Ramirez says the foundation has been looking to open a Christian school for underserved students on Milwaukee's north side for 10 years. Police in Oconomowoc are looking into a battery-operated camera that was found inside a porta-potty at Bender Beach on Tuesday afternoon. Police say the camera was found secured inside the toilet. Police took the camera and they're analyzing it. They've also inspected other restrooms and porta potties in city parks for any other cameras. Anyone who finds a camera where it shouldn't be is urged to contact Oconomowoc Police. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area.
Now through Sunday, it's the Racine County Fair. Details at racinecountyfair.com. Gates open up at 8 a.m., close at 11:30 daily. Check out the Sunset Concert Series this Thursday at the Village Park in Menominee Falls. Grab some lawn chairs, bring your friends, and enjoy the music from 6 until 9 p.m. Prost to the return of German Fest this Friday at the Summerfest grounds. Enjoy 3 days on the lakefront with live music, authentic German food, and so much more. Germanfest.com. Celebrate Brady Street Festival on Saturday from Farwell Avenue to Van Buren Street in Milwaukee. Rock the day and night away, one of the several stages packed with local bands. And enjoy Greenfield's local farmers market this Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. located at Conkle Park. Live music, fresh produce, plenty of ready-to-eat foods.
If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.us.
This summer, 540 a.m. WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 a.m. Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 a.m. WAUK.
Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday, you may remember me talking about the truckers down on the border blocking the southern border on the Mexico side. Because look, you know, Greg Abbott decided, hey, it'd be a good idea. We're going to stop every single truck and we're going to inspect every single truck, and we're going to let all the produce go rotten. We're going to stop these trucks from making their deliveries on time. We're going to harass and intimidate, and we're going to do all of this stuff because we can. and I said yesterday, before this really hit big news, that this was an opportunity for Abbott to make things worse for Biden, because what this is really going to do is cause more inflation. So when you're going to buy strawberries or whatever produce you buy, the costs are going to skyrocket because there's going to be less produce at your supermarket because they're boogering up the whole thing. Now, I've said from the beginning, I'm against the way we do cross-border trucking. I've been against it for a very long time. I like the way it was done back, you know, well before NAFTA. But we are where we are. This is politically motivated. This is because he can. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on our southern border, and maybe tell us what's going on and what we should be doing, I've asked Rick Levy to come talk with us. Rick is the president of the Texas AFL-CIO. He is down in Texas now. Rick, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. I mean, damn, you paint a really pretty picture of what's going on down here. So, talking about it. It's just like each day you wonder, how can it get worse? How can it get weirder? We have a state that we're in the energy capital of the world, allegedly, and we can't keep the lights on. We defund our public schools. We create all these kind of side issues around trans kids and some of the meanest orders that I've ever seen from a governor, going after doctors and parents for trying to take care of their kids. And now, in the midst of all of this, he decides, and I just want to say, they're not inspecting the trucks for smugglers or contraband. They don't have the legal authority to do that. What they're doing is inspecting the trucks for mechanical issues and inspection stickers and things like that, and stopping everyone. And I think that just really highlights the hypocrisy of what's going on here. You said it. It's trying to create more of a crisis. It's trying to compete with Florida about who can be the Trumpiest non-Trump. And that's what's driving public policy in Texas, and it's a damn shame.
No, and this this is one of those things where I think people have to be aware. You know, we're in a moment where everybody's hyper aware of inflation. We're all being socked by it.
Yeah.
Every time we turn around, price increases are happening. You know, if it's not the energy, you're not going to the gas pumps, getting screwed there because, hey, the energy, the oil companies are gouging the heck out of us because they're not increasing production, even though they could. And they've got leases that are already out there, and Biden's giving out, you know, thousands of them. It's this stuff going on. It's the leveraging that's going on because Greg Abbott can. And
well, it's sabotage. It's sabotage. It's the same thing that's happening on the national scene when Obama was elected. What did Mitch McConnell say he was going to do? He was going to make sure that he was a one-term president. He was going to stop everything that Obama tried to do. That's what they're doing. So now the whole point is to create a political crisis and blame it on Biden. And to avoid, frankly, dealing with that he's created. Can I say that?
No.
Dealing with the stuff that he's created. We're a failed state right now. We are a failed state in terms of operating government for the people. And rather than deal with those issues, we're doing stunts like this that, as you point out, are going to raise prices for every single person in this country, and going to, you know, really cause deep hardship on the border. You know, people don't understand the dependence that folks on the border have for commerce. People, you know, before all this craziness, the border was like a little thing. I mean, people shop back and forth. They go back and forth. They get goods back and forth. They go to the doctor back and forth. And now, you know, people are living in severe hardship. And the truckers, you know, those guys were stuck on that bridge for over 24 hours with no food, no water, no place to go to the bathroom, and just stuck there. And so ultimately today, Abbott had to cave and open up the border, but only in one place. And so we're still, in all of the other places in Texas, we're still dealing with this. And unfortunately, y'all are going to pay the price too.
No, I mean, this makes Chris Christie's Bridgegate look like just a mild prank. I mean, to be honest, because this affects the entire country. This isn't just New York.
Yeah. And the other thing that it's, you know, it's each, what he's really trying to show is that he is the, you know, he is the right wing border person. And it's so bad, Rick, that he has spent $4 billion. That's with the B dollars on this quote unquote border security, where he has sent National Guard troops down there for over a year. And what the reports are coming out now is that those National Guard folks have nothing to do. Suicides are at an all-time high among National Guard troops. And the one thing that's really interesting is that those National Guard troops are unionizing with the Texas State Employees Union. National Guard troops, Rick, are unionizing with the Texas State Employees Union because of the horrific conditions that they're down there being a political stunt. You know, National Guard folks, they have lives. You know, they're supposed to be called up in times of emergency. These folks are being away from their families, away from their jobs, and sitting down there. The latest report was that they've all been patrolling the ranches of his wealthy campaign contributors. That's all they do to guard against trespassing. And so in the face of that, now we see this thing where we're literally tying up the whole border just so that he can continue to wave the flag and scapegoat immigrants for all the problems that he and his minions are causing.
And the amount of money is just obscene.
$4 billion.
It must be nice that you guys have the best education system, health care, the best roads. Yeah. It must be great to have a perfectly funded state.
Yeah, that we have all this extra cabbage lying around. It's absurd.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Rick Levy, president of the Texas AFL-CIO, talking about what's going on down on the southern border. What do you think of Marsha Blackburn's thought to wall off the southern border of Tennessee? Are you in favor of a border between Tennessee and Alabama?
I think connecting the words Marsha Blackburn and thought in the same sentence doesn't really compute in my head. And you know, I mean, it's if it wasn't so sad, it would be silly. It would be funny. I wouldn't dignify that with even. I mean, what are you supposed to? What do you do with that? I mean, how do you even respond to that in a way that makes sense? Yeah. It's just, it's absurd.
Now, what we're told is, you know, the news that I've been seeing is that things are just horrible in Texas because, you know, now you're being overrun by migrants coming through. What does the border look like in that you're seeing?
Yeah. Yeah, so the border, it's first of all, those you know, we're not overrun by anybody. But it is true that there's some really horrific conditions down there because we still are dealing with the legacy of Donald Trump's Title 42, where we're consigning people who are fleeing persecution to living in squalor and horrible conditions, and that needs to stop. We still are not complying with international law. What we're doing down there also is we're stuffing the jails full of people because Abbott can't enforce immigration laws, but he's got National Guard people down there arresting people all over the border region for trespassing. And that's a state crime, and they're sitting in state jails, and we're paying for all of that at the same time. And a lot of the border communities I was visiting, I was down there, I guess, 2 weeks ago talking to some teachers, and just the level of stress that it's all putting on, you know, public teachers and public servants to deal with all this stuff. It's tough. I mean, it is an area that needs a solution. It doesn't need demagoguing. It doesn't need scapegoating. It doesn't need braces.
And this is the thing that gets me. I mean, all we seem to get out of the right wing is what you said, the kind of demagoguery, the kind of, the kind of solutions that only cause more problems. And you know, they do it so that they can, you know, get headlines. They do it so that they can get further ahead politically. It isn't about actually good governance. It isn't about solving problems. It's about, hey, look at me, and hey, send me campaign contributions more than anything. And that's a problem.
I'm against that. Yeah. And the thing is, there are such interesting and exciting things going on in Texas. We have Beto O'Rourke is running for governor. And Rick, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but he is running on an explicitly pro-union, pro-jobs, pro-climate jobs campaign, explicitly running on pro-public education. And the race is tightening. And I think it's driving Abbott to go more and more, you know, crazy with his folks. We have some really cool organizing going on in unions down here in Texas. Unions are investing in Texas in a way that has never happened before. And we see the results as, like, the Houston airport just adopted a $15 blanket executive order minimum pay. Same thing's going on in Dallas. They're organizing. Starbucks are organizing. Meatpacking plants are organizing. Nonprofits are people are organizing, you know. And so I think that the thing that lifts my spirits is we talk about how outrageous these Abbott executive orders are is that there really is a counter movement going on that I think is going to continue to grow and grow until we change the state. You know, the farther and the crazier they get, I got to think someday people are going to wake up.
Yeah, I keep saying that. I keep hoping that at least.
At some point.
You know, I'm predicting 22 is going to be a bloodbath for Democrats, and Republicans are going to go further off the extreme where Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, they're going to be mild compared to what we're going to end up with. My hope is that, you know, we wake up and go, no, this is a bit too far, and we rubber band back to somewhere near sane. But I don't know that to be the case.
Yeah, I'm not confident in that. I keep saying, and I can't tell you how many times I've said, oh, well, this one is going to do it. I mean, once they see this one, they're all going to come to their senses. And it's not happening. And I think the problem is that, you know, there's no ability to have a conversation because people wind themselves up in these little bubbles where all they hear is constant reinforcement of this craziness. You know, it's not like they even know what's going on. It's not even like they get another side to even think about. I wish I was more confident, but what I am confident in is that the labor movement in Texas is going to be fighting and clawing and scratching.
Yeah, so let's go back to the trucking.
To send the state in a different direction.
Let's go back to the trucking situation right now. Tomorrow, what are they going to continue the inspections tomorrow? Are we expecting this to go long term? Yeah. And what do you expect the Biden administration to do? Is there anything that Biden can do to stop this? Is there anything that the truckers can do? Anything here?
Well, I think that what we saw today was Abbott trying to, as we say down here, crawfish and try and figure a way out of this thing. Because not only are the truckers pissed, not only is are the folks on the border pissed, but Republican businesses are pissed because they can't. Can I say? Are mad because they can't. I'm sorry. That's twice. I won't do it again. I promise. I'm gonna clean it up. Because you know, like you said, everybody, this is hurting everybody, and it's not accomplishing anything. So he opened up one bridge today in Farr, Texas, PHARR, and my sense is that he will be forced to retreat from this. You know what he does? He comes out with this stuff. Like, for example, you know, he came up with this stunt that he was going to take all the migrants that came across the border and put them on a bus to D.C. You know, this was his big thing. I think it was last week. You know, and then you look at the fine print and, oh, well, you know, only if they want to go. And, oh, yeah. So the first bus came and there was like 20 people or something like, you know, I mean, it's like, it's not, it's just he's gotten what he wanted out of it, which is to get attention and to raise money. And so now I think you'll see him kind of move away from and move on to the next thing.
And on to the next thing. That's the scary part. I mean, it's always what's next and what's going to be worse. But in the meantime, we're going to end up paying more at the grocery store for the things that our families need. And I hope people will, when they go, pay more for their produce at the grocery stores and more for the products that were coming across that southern border, because we do an awful lot of trade with Mexico. I hope that they'll at least understand that part of the inflation that we're suffering is because of Greg Abbott and these policies.
Yeah, we call it the Abbott tax, and it's one that we're paying, and the other one that we're paying is that, you know, the natural gas folks made billions of dollars during the freeze when we were out of power for weeks, and in order to make up that margin, he's put a tax on every consumer's electric bill for the next decade to make up for that money. So there's plenty of Abbott taxes running around. This is just another one.
Just another one. Rick, I appreciate it.
You know, one thing, Rick, I want to say, I don't know if you saw, I know that Ted Cruz was really vigorously supporting the truckers convoy when they were coming to D.C. I've been looking at the news. I haven't seen Ted lining up with the Mexican truckers today. Have you seen that? Have you seen Ted on that
I have
program?
Not.
No. Interesting.
But I have called on the truckers convoy to make that detour and had to head on down there and support their brothers and sisters and their fellow truckers down there.
There you go. Okay.
That's what they should be doing.
You're
solidarity.
Right.
There you go. Cross border.
Yes, sir.
Rick, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Hey, Rick, thank you so much for having me. I apologize for saying the bad things sometimes, but you know, sometimes things need to be said. Anyway, hang in there. Thank you for your voice. Thank you for your work. And let's talk again sometime.
Anytime. Our good friend, Rick Levy, president of the Texas AFL-CIO. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor History has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
One 866-416-Rick. 1-866-416-7425. If you're just joining us, make sure you check out the podcast at therickSmithShow.com. You know, and it's one of those things. Look, I said from the beginning, you know, these truckers, you know, I stand with them. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we should be standing with the truckers of the trucker convoy and making sure that they have an opportunity to, you know, to be heard, to be seen, to be, you know, to make a living. And, you know, where is Ted Cruz? That is a good question. It really is. That is a good question. Now, interesting that he brought up energy. In a place like Texas, you'd think that they would have an abundance of it. And like he said, you know, they got to make up those profits, got to gouge where they can. Now, I found it interesting that, well, Joe Manchin. Yes, Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin evidently said to a group that there's this idea of rebranding or rerouting the Keystone XL pipeline. Evidently, he visited Canada recently, and he said the brand of the XL pipeline is probably gone. Can it be rebranded? Can it be rerouted? Can it be these different things? He added that not sure what the Biden administration was going to do. But it made me think that I'm sure whatever Biden wants, this has got to be something that is going to, I'm sure Manchin's going to push for. Now, understand, the Keystone Pipeline is pumping. It's operational. It's pumping crude as we speak. The Keystone XL Pipeline, that was going to take the dirty stuff, the tar sands oil, and that was going to move it right through the indigenous lands, right through some water, you know, some really important through Nebraska and some waterways, and you know, some place that you really don't want it to go. Considering that this stuff is like the dirtiest of the dirty, this thick, acidic, nasty, corrosive stuff that, well, we know has a history of eating through pipelines and leaking and causing all kinds of chaos. And what we also know is this was never going to help us because we don't actually have a refinery in this country to refine this nasty stuff. This was going to go right through the middle of our country, right out through Texas and out into the international community. This is never going to help us. So anyone who tells us, you know, if we just had that Keystone XL pipeline, this would solve our problems, they're lying to you. Now, should we be drilling more in this moment? Yeah, we should be increasing production, and I agree with that. But that's not Joe Biden. And this is where all those people are, you're not a working class person, you don't know. Yeah, I do know. I know what the energy companies are saying. I've heard their calls. Their calls are like, screw this, we don't need to increase production. We like the prices high. Why? Because it's putting more money in our pocket. Because that's corporate America. Corporate America is happy where prices are. It means they're fattening the bottom lines. Perfect story today. You wonder why food prices are high? You wonder why when you go to the grocery store, prices are really high? Part of it is we just created three new billionaires. James, Austin, and Marianne Cargill are all newly certified billionaires. They're in the new ranks of the top 500 world's richest people. They each now have a new wealth of $5.3 billion, up 20%. Huh, up 20%. That's weird. Their wealth's up 20%. Inflation's been up pretty high, I wonder. Now, Cargill is one of the oldest, you know, founded back in 1865, one of the biggest privately held companies, massive producer of grain and food. You know, numerous people on the billionaire list, worth billions of dollars. And, you know, what's going on? Well, they're getting richer. Why? Because prices are high. And again, why are prices high? Because they're gouging the crud out of us. And yet, what I keep getting from people, Joe Biden's fault. And you go, no, dummy. This is corporate America's fault. And this is where Joe Walsh is right. Democrats have not done a good job at messaging. There should, in this moment, and this is what FDR would have done. You go after these profiteers. You get a commission. And I said this during the pandemic. We need to get a Truman-esque commission to go after these pandemic profiteers. We need someone who's going to step forward and take this on and ensure that nobody gouges working class people the way they are. And then we hold them accountable. But that can only happen if you got sane, rational politicians who are going to fight for them. You got a Kirsten Sinema saying, you know, we're not going to raise a minimum corporate tax. You got problems. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast, take the program on the go, never miss a minute. Quick break, right back, stick around.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1903. That was the day that 25 delegates from 17 cities gathered in Washington, D.C. to discuss forming a union for laborers. General laborers, who often perform some of the most backbreaking work on projects like digging canals and surfacing streets, were often blocked from joining craft unions as full members. The laborers in D.C. decided it was time to join together and formed the International Hod Carriers and Building Laborers Union. That was the beginning of the union that today is called the Laborers International Union of North America, or LIUNA. The union published its first constitution in English, German, and Italian, reflecting the diversity of the members that they represented. At the convention, the delegates issued a declaration of principles. In it, they declared, quote, "We hold that all men are created free and equal, and that honor and merit makes the man, and that self-preservation is the first law of nature, and that he who would be free must strike the first blow." They then went on to describe their purpose, writing, quote, "First, to gather under one grand banner all of those who toil on buildings with our craft and calling. Second, to promote by all honorable means the social and financial standing of all those who wish to partake in the fruits of amalgamation. Third, to create general agitation for the purpose of making a universal 8-hour day to increase the wages of members of the craft. Fourth, to establish a system of conciliation and arbitration in different sections of our land. Fifth, to help members of the craft in securing lawful and profitable employment. For more than a century, LIUNA has fought for the rights of laborers."
I think we can now say the obvious. The Republican Party has gone bull goose bonkers. Its leaders have turned the once proud GOP brand into an unprincipled gaggle of corporate profiteers, hate mongers, and screwball conspiracy theorists. They're so far out that the Hubble telescope couldn't find them. But where is my Democratic Party? Here's a transformative opportunity to forge a solid political coalition, a multiracial, urban-rural, farm-labor alliance based on fundamental principles and programs of fairness and opportunity for all. Isn't that what the party says it stands for? This is the prime time to demonstrate it, to reach out and unite ordinary Americans behind a national agenda of lasting progressive change. It's not like the party elders would have to start from scratch for an energized, feisty movement of grassroots battlers against corporate greed and government injustice is already organizing, winning, and growing popular support all across the country. But rather than welcoming and building on the exciting advances of these popular movements, the party's old-line insider clique of big funders, consultants, and corporate politicos passively assume that the GOP's goofiness and nastiness will turn off enough voters that Democrats can win by default. Meanwhile, the establishment insists that Democrats only push modest incremental reforms so as not to offend corporate funders or spook moderate Republicans. Hello, brilliant strategists. A primary function of the Democratic Party is to offend the corporate powers. Also, there are only about 6 moderate Republicans left in America, so appeasing them is not a big win, especially when it costs you the support of grassroots voters eager for a politics bold enough and big enough to end business-as-usual economics. This is Jim Hightower saying, as our own history teaches, it takes intentional gutsiness to create a politics that matters. Republicans won't do that. Will Democrats?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of great activity coming out around the General Council of the National Labor Relations Board. In fact, you saw a bunch of tweets coming out from our friend, Representative Andy Levin from Michigan, pointing out that, look, you know, the General Council is now saying, hey, look, there's a better way to organize. Yeah, kind of like we used to in the old days. And this is one of these weird moments where the things that she's talking about are the way it used to be. In fact, you know, when I was doing organizing, you know, back in the 90s, you know, I would tell my grandfather about all the things that we were doing, all the obstacles and all the problems and all the, and he's like, you know, what? That's not how we do it. And you know how older people, and we do it, I do it to my kids. That's not how we did it when I was your age. And you know what? He was right. It was better back then, and which is why I'm glad that she's bringing this back and here to share some thoughts on, well, what Jennifer Abruzzo is doing and what the General Counsel at the NLRB is bringing up. And will this stick? Will this help? Will this make a difference? I've asked our good friend, labor lawyer and, well, labor lawyer superhero, Paul Segunda. Paul, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick, for having me as always.
So let's start with this, what the General Counsel's throwing out here, this idea, this Joy Silk doctrine. We've been talking about it here recently. And as I told you during the break, back in the day, you know, it's not something that I knew about. Kind of understood that back in the old days, it wasn't always like what we were going through, forced to go through elections, forced to go through captive audience meetings, forced to go through employers browbeating employees.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're in this moment here all along, maybe possibly could have avoided some of all that. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, well, it's a big moment. It's monumental. A lot of these statements by the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board are statements that some of us in the labor law community have been waiting for literally decades. For instance, with captive audience meetings, where you bring in people and you force them to listen to anti-union rants, employees don't want to hear it. Doesn't matter. They had to sit there. They had to listen. And if they didn't want to listen, if they even spoke out, they could be fired. And I and others had argued many, many years ago, maybe 20 years ago, that that's ridiculous. That's coercive. That's in restraint of their Section 7 rights. And they shouldn't be subjected to that. And yet that was the law probably from about 1960 until perhaps today. And what the General Counsel has said is, look, that's a reprisal. Forcing people to listen without being able to communicate is not speech. It's not employer speech protected by Section 8C of the National Labor Relations Act. It is coercive, intimidating conduct in violation of Section 8A1. It's an unfair labor practice. We're not going to have it. Similarly, the Joy Silk Doctrine, which is just a fancy, fun name for a doctrine that used to require an employer to show good faith doubt that a union no longer had a majority, or that there wasn't a majority who wanted that union to be in place, that they changed that. So it was much easier for employers to decertify unions. We've seen a lot of that, of course, lately. And the hope is, Rick, that these statements, these initiatives by the current General Counsel of the NLRB will put the thumb back on the scale so it's a little more evenly balanced and workers can truly be represented by someone of their own choosing if that's what they want.
Yeah. Now, I go back to the reason I bring up my grandparents, because both of them were big union activists. They were both union members most of virtually all of their working lives. My grandfather actually, you know, in numerous workplaces, you know, worked to get unions into those workplaces. And the stories that he told were not these Herculean leaps of, you know, worrying about, are your is your job going to be on the line? Do you have to go through the kind of captive audience, you know, brow beatings that come along with this? And I remember telling him these things, and he couldn't believe it, that, you know, in this country where you have the right to organize, and he kept coming back to this, you know, his generation firmly believed and internalized that they had a right to organize. It was their right, and they fought for that right, and they demanded their rights. And this is one of those moments where I hope, by seeing what she's putting out, and maybe it once again makes us look at the National Labor Relations Act and look at this, you know, for 85 years, the Supreme Court has affirmed that we have the right, a fundamental right to organize. And maybe as workers, we go, yeah, it's our right. And damn it, we're going to fight for it.
Let's hope so. I mean, when the Wagner Act was first passed in 1935, it was very clear that its purpose was to promote collective bargaining by allowing workers to organize into units of their own choosing and to use that collective power to bargain more beneficial terms and conditions of employment. Now, what happened was, starting in 1947 with the Taft-Hartley Act, we had a pushback. We had a movement by conservatives who actually overrode the veto of President Truman at the time and basically said, it's not about promoting collective bargaining, it's really about free choice. And they kind of put all their weight on this idea of free choice, that we don't care what employees do as far as unions, not unions, but we want them to have free choice. Of course, this was a sleight of hand. This was a sleight of language, because what it allowed to, what employers were able to do, is use language and other types of conduct to threaten, intimidate, and otherwise make it impossible for employees to actually engage in a free and open vote. And as a result, a lot of employees were not actually voting how they felt. There was a famous statistic, Rick, and you might be familiar with it, called the representation gap. It's the yearly gap that we see between how many employees help unions win elections in this country versus how many employees say, like in a Gallup poll or a Pew Research poll, that they're either in favor of unions or they themselves would like to be in a union. And there is a gap. There is a substantial gap between those who say they want to be in a union and those who will actually vote yes in a union, because they're scared, they're intimidated, they're browbeated. So all of what's happening in the last week and today is welcome news if we really care about promoting collective bargaining and true free choice, as far as whether workers want to be in a union or not.
No, and to that point, you know, if these captive audience meetings didn't work, if the millions of dollars they spend on these union busters coming in and browbeating your employees didn't work, corporate America wouldn't be spending the money. If the return on investment wasn't there, they wouldn't be spending it. If Amazon wasn't getting what they wanted out of these union busters coming in, they wouldn't be spending $200 million in Bessemer, Alabama, right, to deny 5,000 workers the right to have a say in that one workplace. They wouldn't be spending that kind of money.
Well, because they know that once workers get that right and that power, others are going to want it too. Look at the Starbucks situation. It started with one. I think we're up to 18 or 19 bargaining units now, including in the home store in Seattle. So what happens is, when workers are actually told the truth, understand what the union brings to them, it equalizes power in the workplace. It's you know, when you say to workers, okay, your employer's Amazon. You are one individual. Do you think that you have any ability to bargain any term or condition of employment with Amazon? And the answer is, of course you don't. It's a take it or leave it situation. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. Well, that's true with one person. But what if there are units that are made up of hundreds or thousands of workers who can truly upset the operations of the company, can disrupt the company until they're treated with dignity and fairness? Well, you change the calculation. Yeah. And that's all we're talking about. We're trying to equalize the field between the so-called industrial combatants here.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Paul Segunda, former labor law professor, current labor superhero attorney, one of my favorite guys on the planet. And I say that because I think you're a really good guy. I think you're one of those people out there fighting the good fight, Paul. I really do.
We should start a mutual admiration society.
But here's the thing. You said a moment ago, it's about language. And we hear the language of choice. We hear the